Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 50 of the Playoff Push Podcast. I'm your host, Jack Dobbins. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest, former Milwaukee Brewers slugger, Corey Hart. How are we doing today?
Yeah, man, how you doing?
All good, all good. I don't know if you know this. My last episode 49, was with Prince Fielder's son, Jaden, and he said that his earliest baseball memory is playing monster trucks with your son in the dirt at Miller. So that's kind of fun.
Nice thing. I just saw that. That's pretty cool.
You did see it?
Yeah, I just saw that. I think Prince actually sent it to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great interview, and I now get to interview you. It's kind of sick. It's like, the son of a guy who you played with, and then now you.
Nice. No, yeah, Jaden's awesome. So hopefully things work out. He seems like he's doing pretty well so far.
He is, OPS over 800 so far in his first year of his professional career. But he went to, the Frederick Keys right out of high school. In high school, you weren't necessarily locked into one role. I believe you played like every position, came in as pitcher sometimes. How did that, do it all experience really sharpen your baseball IQ and help you in the majors?
I mean, I think so. As soon as I stopped playing, I started coaching. I think my experience as a kid, like learning how to play pretty much just whatever the coach needed me to play, like kind of helped me be, I guess, more versatile. I mean, I think I was a good hitter, but defensively, I was always had to work. So I kind of figured if, I would move around as much as I could just to try to get my bat in the lineup, because I was always, I mean, most hitters, that's the funnest part of the game is getting the batter's box and trying to be competitive. But, obviously, there's only one DH spot. And of course, I was in the National League, so there was no DH spot. So well, back then at least, I had to figure out how to be average at best. I mean, I worked my butt off to try to make sure the team, wanted to use me in more than one spot. So when I coach, I just, same thing, I make kids play at least two spots just so when they go to college, they have an idea of if there's an upperclassman in their spot, they can kind of move around a little bit and give themselves more of a chance to get in the field a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So you played mostly right field in the majors, a bit of first base sprinkled in. In high school, was it the same story, or was there a different position you preferred?
Well, actually, I was the tall out of a position shortstop, so
Ooh, like an Ellie De La Cruz type.
I was really I caught everything. I just couldn't make the throw. I threw a lot of stuff in the stands, so nobody was safe. But it's one of those things. So in high school, I played shortstop, but I moved around just like so. If a scout was there, they wanted me to. If they wanted me to play center field or third base or first base, so I kind of moved around, like to appease like some of the scouts, but for the most part, I was always a shortstop.
Gotcha. And you went to the major leagues. Your debut in 2004, you turned on an 0-2 pitch, sent it screaming just foul into the second deck, got a standing ovation despite striking out. Your next at bat, over a year later, ends in a 3-run homer and another ovation. What was going through your mind in that moment, and what was the weight it took off your shoulders?
I mean, my first at bat was crazy. I think I'm the first player ever to have, three standing ovations and end in a strikeout. So, because I got an ovation when I came up to the box. When I came up in 04, the team wasn't very good. So we were pretty, I think the fans were eager to start seeing some of the new faces. And so it was, a standing ovation for the walk up, the standing ovation for the foul ball homer. And then even when I struck out, I got a pretty good ovation. So it was one of those things where I was like, oh man, these fans are pretty crazy because they're definitely eager to see that new wave that comes through. So I was just happy to be a part of it. But getting a home run, I guess as a player, I wasn't never, I hit home runs, but I wasn't like the home run guy. So I think that wasn't part of like my mindset. I was just trying to get, just like anybody else, when you get to the big leagues, you just don't want to be 0 for a long time. So I was pretty excited just to get that first knock and it just happened to go out of the ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone plays with Prince Fielder, it's kind of hard for the other guy to be the home run guy, you know?
Oh, dude. I mean, I played with some dudes. I mean, even coming up in the system, I had Prince and Ricky, and then Braun was pretty shortly after. So, a guy like me and like Hardy, we just try to play and just kind of fit in as long as we could.
So at 6'6", you didn't exactly fit, the general lightning quick stereotype that you see in the majors often. Had 31 stolen bags in AAA, multiple 20 steal seasons in the majors. How do you think you maintained the burst and base running edge at your size, which isn't necessarily known as a base stealing height?
We had a guy, Frank Primlos. He was our trip. Well, he was my Double A manager too. My Double A and Triple A manager was amazing, base running coach. So, just being able to be around him kind of helped me escalate, I guess, my game because I wasn't like this huge hitter, but I was able to do some things and being able to run kind of helped me out because that actually helped me get to the big leagues. Because when I finally came up in 05 for, I guess, for most of the, for pretty much good, I came up to play center field, and if I was a slower guy, I would have never been up. I would have never made it up in 05 because I was still, right fielder, but our first rounder wasn't having the best year. So, they needed a center fielder. And I was kind of by default, you're like, all right, he can run a little bit. Let's put him over there, see what he can do.
Yeah, exactly. Center field's a spot. You got covered most ground. You got to have the speed for it. And I mean, obviously, you had that tw multiple 20 steal seasons is nothing, to scoff at. It's a pretty good career right there. Was there ever a time where like that speed caught, whether it be a teammate or an opponent off guard, they were like, "Whoa, this guy's fast."
Yeah, it's actually a few times. I remember we were playing the Braves when for Cal was at short. I think I just hit a ball, I guess, to his backhand. And I got, it was one of those things where I was running out of the box when I hit it. And I beat him because he had a cannon. And I beat it. And he came across the field. He has a huge deep voice. And he was the same thing, like, oh my God, I can't believe you run so fast. I'm like, well, when you don't, when you're not sure when your next hit's going to come, you got to make sure you get down the line as fast as possible.
No, exactly. That was the one thing that, Ichiro preached a lot was just getting out the box as fast as he can. He ran, and that's like that. He talked about it a lot at the Hall of Fame, which I covered. I got the shirt on, but he talked
Nice.
about a lot about his out the box strategy and how it really just benefited him a ton in the base hit sector. So, what did you try to do that a lot? Just try to get out the box as fast as possible, bolt over to first.
Yeah, it was early on. I mean, towards the end of my career, I was slow and broken, but early on, I was always chasing, trying to have a, decent average. So anytime I could, I guess, smell a hit, I was getting after it.
Yeah, I mean, during your prime, you averaged, 25 homers, 38 doubles, 90 RBI, 16 steals per 162. That's like a rare mix of, power, just gap to gap production, speed, everything. Which part of your skill set did you really take the most pride in?
RBIs, I guess. I mean, I was never, like I said, I played with, Prince and Bronny and even Jeff Jenkins for a minute and Carlos Lee. And like I was with Cano and Nelson Cruz a little bit. So like I always had guys that I didn't have to, that were kind of the focus. So I thought just putting the ball in play and trying to get an RBI every chance I could was, that was kind of my highlight.
So mainly like, just gap to gap, just knock the ball where the fielders aren't and hope to get the guy in from second or from first if they're fast enough.
Yeah, because I mean, I played with that. Carlos Lee was actually one of the guys that I played with early on that kind of helped me a lot. Like, basically, the biggest thing you try to find, I guess, figure out as a hitter is how they're going to try to get you out. So when you have a runner in score position, running at third, less than two, they're trying to get you out a certain way. So, and I kind of picked his brain a lot to try to make sure to give myself the best chance in those situations. And he was obviously preached middle of the other way, especially with guys on all the time. Because, if you're sitting there trying to hit a ball to left with a runner at third, odds are you hit a ground ball to third base or you pull a foul. So he was, he kind of helped me along the lines. It is kind of a more of a mindset thing. And no, I was definitely more trying to stay gap to gap and the other way with guys on just to keep myself from rolling over so much.
And clearly that worked. I mean, 38 doubles on average a year is pretty incredible. But speaking of Carlos Lee, he was one of those guys who you barely beat out in the All-Star game voting. I believe that was. Oh,
That was
wait. So, how did it feel like to get not only one, but two All-Star games under your belt in, maybe the prime era of hitting? You had all those guys. You had Ortiz, you had Miggy, you had all these incredible ball players. What was it like to participate in those games?
It was crazy, man. And I think like that was the first I knew that, Milwaukee had a good fan base, but to see them kind of step up like they did against some of the huge markets right there. I mean, like, we were going up against Houston, New York, I think Philly. And there was another big market in there that, and then of course, then I was the fan vote, which was amazing with Milwaukee being such a small market to be able to stand up and, get me in there versus some of those huge teams like that. But no, I mean, just anytime you're against guys like that, you kind of sit back and realize like, things are going pretty well for you.
That 2010 year, you were in the home run derby that year as well against two of the guys who I mentioned, Ortiz and Miggy. What do you remember most about that night? Because that's an even more exclusive club. A lot of people can say they've been in an All-Star game. Not many people can say they've been selected to play in the home run derby, especially against a Hall of Famer and a future Hall of Famer.
I mean, it was exciting. I mean, I was excited to get in. I was definitely would have never said no to that because just being in that situation was kind of surreal. I mean, like I was. So I was lucky enough to be in the 08 game. I was able to watch like Braun, and then that was the New York game where Hamilton went crazy. And well, just be a part of it. It was a cool situation for. I mean, I never get back home, so just to kind of be like elevated into that national spotlight just for a second. So all the people that I grew up with, and the kind of the fans where I grew up in Kentucky were able to kind of watch was kind of cool.
Was there a moment outside of the batter's box from that derby that really stuck out to you, whether it be an interaction with another player or with a fan or something like that?
I mean, I think it's just more of just being with the guys, like, being, of course, I got to the final the semi, whatever. I was like the final three.
Yeah.
So it was like me and like Ortiz and Hanley just kind of walking around with those guys was just pretty surreal. I mean, like, seeing like Jeter and Pettitte and I don't know, just being a part of like that iconic group like that was surreal for me.
Yeah, speaking of an iconic group, CC Sabathia, of course, just inducted, played with Jeter on those Yankees teams. You were on the same field as him during his legendary 08 second half, in which, it was complete game after complete game. We all knew what the stats looked like, but what did it look like from the outfield? What was it about that time of CC's career that really made him the dominant pitcher he was?
I mean, I said the numbers kind of stand out, but the fact that he was in a free agent year, and he literally took the ball in short rest for like a month straight. And like it's crazy because like a guy in his, I mean, he ended up obviously getting paid, but the guy in his situation where the money is uncertain, so you want to make sure you stay healthy and you go to free agency in the best, kind of a good situation. But for him to like ask for the ball in literally short rest for 7 or 8 straight starts. I mean, like that was his character was just so big, and he was so. And well, of course, he was. Just, if he wasn't there, we wouldn't make the playoffs that year. But just for him to kind of take control like that and kind of lean, let us lean on him was huge. I mean, because we were so close the year before, and for him to come in and like control the situation for us was awesome. And of course, he was such a good dude, and one of the best teammates I've ever been around.
Yeah, I mentioned how my last episode was with Jaden Fielder. The episode before that was with Jabba Chamberlain, and he said that when CC was on the Yankees, he used to just beat everyone in RBI baseball. Was there like an event or a video game that CC played against everyone?
Not really with us. I mean, he was only with us for
Was a short period of time,
a short
but.
period, yeah. But I mean, the only thing, he beat us in all shoot in the shoe game.
Ooh.
We would walk in and he'd have boxes and boxes of Jordans. I was actually lucky enough to be his locker mate, and he would just literally, he would part. He'd have literally two boxes of like 6 or 7 shoes high, and he'd be like, "What side do you want?" And I'm like, "What?" And he would just give me half the shoes. So he wouldn't even look at them. He would just like, "Here, take these." I'm like, "Oh shit, thanks."
What side do you want?
So,
Just like shoe boxes stacked, and he'd just be like, which one?
literally, he would part them in the middle, and he would just slide them to my side of the locker. I'm like, "Oh,
That's
what's
kind
in?"
of nice.
And that was early on. So I wasn't gonna go buy Jordans, and
No,
especially
exactly.
multiple Jordans at that time. So I was pretty stoked that I was able to benefit from his good fortune.
Yeah, something else that was kind of fun about the Hall of Fame induction is he was signing at this building, a few blocks down from the Hall of Fame. And a representative from the Jordan brand came and gave him like his own Hall of Fame edition Jordans. But it's just like so crazy. Yeah, they came and Amber was there and they were making it like this big deal. He took a picture with them. So I didn't know like he was like really associated with Jordan like that. I guess he always
Yeah.
has been.
Yeah, he was one of I think Jeter probably was the first one, but like he was right there, and he was such, I mean, he's one of those guys that like he's gonna make any brand more valuable just because his personality is so good and so big.
Yeah, such a great dude. He was so nice, answered all the questions for us media members and took time with the fans. It was great. Such a nice dude. His son's great too. Carson, I covered him in Trenton during the first half, so pretty good experience there. But let's get back to your time on the Brewers. You're sixth all time in career slugging percentage on the Milwaukee Brewers. You rank ahead of legends like Yount and Molitor and Cecil Cooper. What does being on that list mean to you? And did you even realize that you were like that high compared to the Hall of Famers?
No, I mean, not really, I guess, but I think it's a different type of game. I think when I was there, average was kind of a big deal. So, I was trying to put the ball in play as much as you could. And I said I was pretty fast early on. So I was fortunate that I don't know if you remember a guy named Eddie Cedar. He was the third base coach. He was first base coach for a minute, third base coach for a long time in Milwaukee. And he was always really good about, he didn't care if he got thrown out. Yeah, I mean, he always wanted me to try to go to two, try to go three. So, like him being there pretty much my whole career, like gave me a lot more extra base hits. I mean, because it didn't as a hitter, if it doesn't matter if you get thrown out, like you're gonna try to leg out a lot more doubles and a lot more triples. And he really preached get after it, make good turns and just make the outfielder throw you out. So, him being there alone got me, 100 points on my slugging easy.
Exactly, and it goes back to your speed. Most
Yeah.
people, that are 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", wouldn't be able to leg that out unless they have the elite speed. I think that ties together pretty well because he was confident in your ability to really leg it out.
Yeah, and but I did it helped me. I like him being confident in me made me a little more confident and make sure. So I was always trying to go for the extra base. And again, I was fortunate to be around some good guys. And so the coaches there were definitely amazing, and they're still obviously still amazing. Their system right now is pretty crazy. So I don't know. It was just a good spot and a good. I was lucky to be a part of it.
You're also on the Brewers Wall of Fame. I mean, what did it feel like when you stood on the field that day? What moments flashed back in your mind from your career and your time in Milwaukee?
Well, I mean, just being a part of it was is pretty crazy because it's I wasn't a high draft pick, and I grew up in kind of a small town. I wasn't a big signing bonus guy. I got like 45 grand, so just to go from almost a throwaway to being a part of that was surreal. I mean, it was just crazy. I mean, I love Milwaukee, so just being so invested in it and for them to kind of to get that honor was awesome. My family, of course, we go back all the time just because it's such a big part of our lives, but. I don't know. It was a real cool thing, a cool day. But I guess when I was there throwing the first pitch out, my son was with me, my kids were there, my wife was watching. I don't know. It was one of those things where you flash back. I would say the best memory there was the 08, getting to the playoffs. Like when we won the game in 08 to clinch the playoffs, we actually had clinched a tie with the Mets, so we actually had to wait for the Mets game. So we're
Really?
Yeah, so we clinched. We're all celebrating because worst case we had to go to a tiebreaker game in New York. But so there's 45,000 people there, so all the families come on the field and we're all celebrating and drinking. But they have the Mets game on the big screen, so
Oh my gosh, that's like right out of a movie.
it was really cool. So we're all like celebrating, like because worst case it's a tiebreaker, but best case scenario the Mets lose and then we're in the playoffs. So they had the game on the big screen. None of the fans left. So of course the Mets lost, and we ended up really getting to celebrate. But just that moment was pretty cool. And then the Hoffman when Hoffman got a 600 save, just like it got carried off the field. I mean, it was such a cool moment just to be a part of it.
That's amazing. How do you hope Brewers fans like remember you in that Milwaukee uniform?
I mean, I hope hopefully they remember me as just like a hardworking blue collar guy. I mean, I'm extremely happy and extremely fortunate to be in the big leagues, but I felt like I was really fortunate to be a part of a smaller team like that, because we were really invested in the town. I did a ton of signings. I took my kids everywhere to try to stay, like, I just wanted to be involved in everything. So I don't know. Hopefully, they see me as like a big character guy. I mean, obviously, hopefully, they thought I was a pretty good player, but at the end of the day, I want them to realize that how important they were to me and my success.
And then you went back pretty recently. You shredded five homers at the Brewers Alumni Derby, I believe, like right around 2 or 3 weeks ago. How did it feel to like get back to hitting homers at a ballpark you called home for so many years with the fans cheering right around?
It was so crazy because they asked me, I was like, sure, I'll help. I would say there's three things you don't say no to. Like obviously one is don't, if you ever get asked to hit in a big league stadium, don't ever say no. And of course, if your wife asks you to go take a shower, don't say no. And then if your kid ever wants to play catch with you, go outside and play catch with your kid. So when they asked me, I was pretty excited about it. But again, I'd retired 10 years ago. I haven't really swung a bat in 5 years, so it was more of like the, oh shit, don't hurt myself because, I mean, I'm in still decent shape. I mean, but I don't like you don't do anything fast anymore. And there's no like. The quick twitch is gone, right?
Yeah,
You do get
exactly.
an elliptical or walk or jog. I work out, but I'm not doing anything quick. So like that explosiveness is gone. So I was just trying to make sure I didn't hurt myself. But so it's funny because I look at my swing. I just wanted to hit. I wanted to hit one home run. So
Just one.
I was super cool just because I hadn't done it in so long. And
Yeah.
I hit twice on a high school field, like the week before. So and there's obviously a lot smaller. You get out there, and you're like, oh shit, you don't realize. You forget how big the big league stadiums are.
That was your prep, a high school field.
Two high school, yeah. I had a Brett Prince. He pitched for the Diamondbacks and Yankees. He was a friend of mine. So he threw twice to me out here,
Oh
trying
my
to
goodness.
leading up to it. But I think it was the point. The funny part is most of us were drinking and in the cage before the game, trying to get ready, trying to stay loose and not hurt ourselves. But we had a few guys that took it way too serious, but. For the most part, it was a fun experience, but we all thought there was going to be 10,000 people there, and there ended up being like 45,000 people stayed for the Derby. So a crazy experience.
And you're like, oh, look at this. Like, it's entirely full.
Yeah, that definitely made the butts get tight.
Oh my goodness. I have one final question for you. My uncle is like the biggest, superhero fan of all time. And I did some digging and I heard that you're like a pretty big fan of like comic books and movies like that. I know you have had experiences with The Dark Knight before, but I wanted to ask you, what's your favorite superhero movie and why does it stand out to you?
The Dark Knight.
Is it? Okay, that's what I thought. That's what I found. Then I was like, oh, interesting.
I said, yeah, I got a ton of comic books and action figures. I got all that stuff. But no, Dark Knight, just I don't know, just a great
Is
movie.
that the
He
older one or the newer one?
the one with Heath Ledger.
Okay, gotcha.
So
That's what I thought.
it was like the newer trilogy. So I guess not that they have a new one out now, but
Yeah.
just that. I mean, his role in the Joker was just amazing, and just I don't know, it's such a good waking up. I'm just a big Batman fan anyway, so.
Love to hear it. Alrighty, everyone, that's going to do it here for episode 50 of the Playoff Push Podcast. Thank you all for tuning in. Corey, any final words?
I mean, appreciate it. Thanks for being out, or thanks for having me on here.
Of course. Thank you all for tuning in to episode 50. I'm your host, Jack Dobbins, and have a great rest of your day.